Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Wisconsin Democrats hold their first virtual state convention tonight. We ask party chair Ben Wickler how it will work. Governor Tony Evers' aides secretly taped his May 14 conversation with Republican legislative leaders, an Act 1 GOP leader called Nixon-esque. A conservative group asked the State Elections Commission to formally prohibit third-party ballot harvesting. The recommended candidate to be UW system president praises Wisconsin's diverse economy. Rewind, your week in review for June 12th.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
And today, on today's edition of Rewind, Wisconsin Democrats will hold their first virtual online state convention tonight. So we're glad that Party Chair Ben Wickler has agreed to join us for the first few minutes of Rewind to talk about that convention. Mr. Chairman, welcome to Rewind, sir.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Okay. JR and I have covered quite a few conventions. You've been to a few. They're based on energy, in-person activity, fire up. How do you gauge the success of an online convention, Mr. Chair?
We are going to be, first of all, watching how many people tune in and how many people stay in. I think one of the ways that I've learned in the Zoom era that you can gauge whether an event is going well is whether you're leading audience or holding your audience. And I think we have a powerhouse lineup. You know, conventions are both a kind of momentum generating mechanism. They also actually do work. There's an election for our members of the Democratic National Committee. So I think a lot of people will be there to vote and to hear the speeches from the candidates. But then we've got some headliners like the future president of the United States. So I think we're going to give people a very ample reason to stay tuned in, and a united Democratic Party, including, you know, Bernie Sanders, who's the other Democrat on the ballot this spring here, and all of our statewide leadership, from Governor Evers and Mandela Barnes to Tammy Baldwin to our whole congressional delegation. We just have a terrific lineup of folks. I think all the feedback I've gotten from our activists is a great degree of excitement.
JR?
So I'll be tuning in tonight, covering the convention. First time I'll be covering it from home in my long career doing this. What message should I expect to hear from the speakers tonight as they go through their speeches to the virtual audience?
So I think the first thing that we're going to make sure everyone hears is a recognition of the extraordinary moment that we're in, alongside the crisis of coronavirus and the economic collapse, this moment of struggle for racial justice in our state and in our country, and the outrage that people feel and felt when they watched the video of the murder of George Floyd, and the yearning for change. And we're going to ground that in the history of Wisconsin, which has had movements for a century and a half to fight for a state and a country where Black lives matter. The second thing you'll hear is a intense determination to come together as a party and to beat Donald Trump. This is a state that understands how important it is, and it's a state that has been working, where Democrats have been working since the spring of 2017 to get ready for what's happening 5 months from now. So you're going to hear a party that is bringing everything to that fight. And the third thing you're going to hear is just a lot of pride in our state. There are so many people who have exciting victories to share. Like there might be a mayor of Wausau, for example, who's just really excited about the change that's happening and the energy that grassroots activists are bringing to help lift up a new generation of leaders.
Ben, I saw the RSVP sign up to participate. Can you give us any numbers? Have you heard any numbers? How many people? And what's your goal? Do you want X hundreds, more than 1,000? Talk to us about the actual process.
I'm not going to throw out a specific number for the very reason that we don't know how this is going to land, because it's the first time we've ever done a virtual convention. To do our critical party business, we have to have delegates from all over our state, and we had tremendous interest in being delegates, even though the convention, doesn't involve hospitality suites where people have delicious food or the kind of roar of the crowd when you're in a sea of 1,200 people all cheering for the same speaker. So we've been gratified about the interest up front, but you know, in a virtual world, things can be really different. So I'm not gonna box myself in with a number. I'll just say that right now I'm anticipating a great degree of excitement from folks who are tuning in online. The other thing that's strange about this is there'll be people, you know, watching through wisdems.org/live, and there'll be people watching on Wisconsin Eye, and there'll be people watching on YouTube, there'll be people watching on Facebook, there'll be people tuning in on the radio, all these different ways that people can engage with this. And that'll actually make it harder to count the numbers, but the numbers might actually be larger than they would be in a normal in-person convention when you add those all those platforms up together.
Well, when you talk about a normal in-person convention, in an election year like this, I might see a Joe Biden in person. I might see a Biden surrogate come talk to Wisconsin, one of the, what, maybe five or six really key states in the election this fall. Is Biden missing an opportunity to kind of really be in the front pages of Wisconsin because this is a virtual convention versus him being here in person, or that top surrogate being here?
Well, Joe Biden will be. I know that he has a message for Wisconsinites that we'll hear tonight. So I am very glad that he's engaging that way. You know, we are in a different world. Obviously, having President Trump and Joe Biden holding dueling rallies in Cuba City, Wisconsin, would be something that the whole country would tune into. But in this environment, we have learned how to organize and win virtually. We did it in the spring Supreme Court election, and we saw a level of engagement with millions of voter contacts, thousands of volunteers, that made a profound difference in that election. So I think we are, charting in uncharted territory, but we also are finding a path where there was no path before. And I think tonight is going to be one piece of that broader effort.
A process question, Ben. Again, I saw the RSVP. If I'm an independent Wisconsin voter and I'm curious about your convention and I RSVP, am I automatically labeled a Democrat and am on every Democratic Party mailing list forever?
Because of federal legislation, we are resolute in ensuring that people have the opportunity to unsubscribe from any email list that they don't want to be on.
Okay.
We welcome Democrat curious people to check out what's going on with this convention, and we hope that they'll stick around. Maybe it'll not be for everyone, but I think a lot of people are going to find that they like what they hear. And it is a moment, because it's a virtual convention and people will tune in, they'll register with their contact info. I think we might find that there are suddenly more people ready to sign up as Democrats. To become a Democrat, a full-on member of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, you have to fill out a membership form, and we encourage folks to chip in a few bucks. So there's a slightly different process for that. But it's kind of a way of getting a foot in the door. And we hope that people will go on to spend a lifetime working to elect Democrats and work for change in our state.
Ben, so in my time covering these conventions, the state ones, they're a little different than the national convention. The state ones seem to be like a chance for a pep rally with the base, the people who make the phone calls, stuff the envelopes, hand out the yard signs. They get a little bit of a juice of energy, right, in the spring before they go into the fall. How do you do that when it's done virtually? I mean, the other side is, do they need a burst of enthusiasm right now? Can you jazz up your base any more than it already is with what's going on in Wisconsin and with President Trump?
Right now, the problem is not getting people excited. It's giving excited people things to do. And you're going to hear specific calls to action for things that people who are watching online can do from home right now to make a difference in this election. The kind of core of our work at the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and what I ran on when I ran for chair a year ago is organizing. It's the work of reaching out to voters, to friends and neighbors, to people across the state, helping them to register, helping them to request absentee ballots, getting their votes out. And we are going to ask everyone who's watching, and especially folks who are already committed Democrats, to pour themselves into that work. We have seen throughout this last year a level of engagement and energy way, way out in advance of the election, and then certainly surging in the spring election at a level that I can't remember in my 39 years. And I think we're going to see that continue through this moment and all the way through November 3rd.
Okay, we got time for two more questions. So mine and then JR's final questions. Is this a template for a potential Democratic national convention virtually from Milwaukee and August 17th, Mr. Chairman?
this convention is fundamentally about doing the party business of electing our Democratic National Committee members and about gathering people to unite and then move right back into the work. This is an organizing kind of largely internal event. So it's something I'm very excited about, but this is, I don't think it's on anything like the same order of magnitude or even format from the National Convention. This convention, for example, is only one night. Normally we do a 2-day event. We removed a whole bunch of different pieces of speaking, of caucus meetings, of even platform and resolutions we pushed to next year. We have a lot of organizing to do right now to win this election. And we decided that we were going to put our main focus this year on doing everything we could for voter mobilization. So I am very excited about tonight's event, but I think that you will come out of this still curious and excited to find out what the National Convention has in store.
Well, just a very quick follow-up then. I know Chairman Perez's comments this week. Do you expect a virtual DNC convention not centered in the city of Milwaukee?
I expect that the convention will be centered in the city of Milwaukee, and it'll be somewhere on a spectrum from people gathered in person with a significant, you know, external virtual component, somewhere between that and virtual. And we won't know maybe until pretty soon before it. Frankly, right now there's evidence that we're starting a second wave of coronavirus in this country. We don't know where any of this is going. And when I talk to the convention team, the word that they use with me is flexibility. They want the possibility of, you know, moving as many decisions as late as possible so that they can take stock of what the conditions are at that moment. What I guarantee you won't have is what Trump seems to be trying to inflict on this country, which is mega rallies with people packed together like sardines who have all signed indemnity forms because they might get coronavirus in order to see the Republican nominee. And that's not the way Democrats are going to do business and do our work this year.
Last question, JR, please.
You know, one of the things about Vice President Biden, Ben, has been this criticism that he's kind of in the basement, isn't really getting out, and then that when he does get out, he commits gaffes. With what's going on in this virtual convention tonight and him addressing it, I'm assuming by a recorded message, how does Joe Biden have to get in person into Wisconsin to kind of, you know, meet with voters to show that he's here? Because obviously Milwaukee was chosen for the convention site because of a symbolic trying to rebuild the blue wall. Hillary Clinton didn't come here in 2016 for the general election. How does Joe Biden connect with people personally, in person, with what's going on between now and November?
Joe Biden has one of the biggest hearts in American politics. He has an ability to connect with people and to show them that he's listening and that he's listening with his whole soul. And I am tremendously confident that we're going to see him bring that to Wisconsin in one way or another as we move forward. This is a campaign, a presidential campaign, a party, and a nominee who understands the centrality of Wisconsin. And no one is going to make the mistake this cycle of thinking that Wisconsin is a sure thing that they can take for granted. We will be in the fight. We have been in the fight, and we're going to cross the finish line on Election Day, having left it all on the field.
Democratic Party Chair Ben Wickler, thanks so much for joining us on Rewind, and we'll let you get back to planning the convention. Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks so much.
JR, let's turn to some other news. JR, I want to play the 22-second answer Governor Evers gave to your question yesterday about the taped phone call. Then we'll talk about it. Could we please hear that video?
I did not know about it. A staffer wanted help in taking notes, and that's why that staffer did that. And I will not discuss personnel issues in public, but needless to say, the practice has ended with this one time.
Okay, now let's give the context. Aide or aides to Governor Evers secretly recorded the May 14th conversation between the governor and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Assembly Speaker Voss, the day after Safer at Home was struck down. The governor, as you heard, wasn't aware. He also told us yesterday he was in a different location. And let's see, the recording surfaced after an open records request from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So, JR, before we get to some of the reaction, talk to us about that.
Look, I asked people this week, since this kind of came out, like, okay, what's this mean? Like, what's the damage done here? And one of the responses I got was that, look, you know, in politics, you know, we both covered leaders who didn't really like each other, who didn't get along, who maybe even didn't respect each other. But there was kind of like this unspoken understanding of what happens behind a closed door. You might leak it out, but you don't tape that conversation. That's like a bridge too far. And in talking to people this week, one question I had was, okay, how does the governor repair this relationship? And the answer was, I don't know if he can. I mean, there have been calls for him to fire the aide or aides who okay taping this, because it's a bad look when the governor is unaware that his staff is taping him in a conversation with leaders, that he didn't authorize it, he didn't know about it. That's not a great look. Two, things weren't great for these guys anyway. So how does this help him get things done? Because, you know, Governor Evers is going to run for election 2022, we believe, at least he said he is. If he runs in 2022, what's he going to run on? He needs Republicans in some ways to buy into some of his priorities. For example, he wants them to pass a bill to overhaul policing policies, right? How's he get that done without Republicans buying in? This isn't going to help that. He wants Medicaid expanded, which Republicans weren't a big fan of anyway. How's he get that done without their buy-in, without their trust? That's an issue for him, because in 2022, he can't really run against a do-nothing, quote-unquote, legislature when he was a guy who ran in 2018 as, I can bridge the divide and get things done. So how does he fix this? And I don't really know. And ask people this week, they didn't know.
But more importantly, JR, they have got to work together with COVID damaging our tax collections. We may get into that later. They have got to come up. They've got to recraft. They got to redo the next fiscal year budget. But let's look at some of the reactions. First of all, from Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, 26 years in the ledge. This is one of the most brazen examples of an unethical, unprofessional conduct I have ever seen. The governor has gone so far off the deep end, he's making secret Nixon-esque recordings from the East Wing of the Capitol. Speaker Voss, state leaders can only get things done if there is a sense of trust, civility, and integrity. The governor has violated all three of these critical character traits by secretly taping conversations with fellow leaders. Finally, JR, just quickly, your reaction to the quote from Melissa Baldoff, the governor's spokeswoman. Recording was intended for internal use only, to inform detailed note-taking and planning next steps. This was not intended for release to the media or anyone else. Did they not understand it's covered by the open records law, JR? Just quickly.
Well, it brings up more questions. So if they didn't intend it for public use, how did it get out? How did somebody know to ask? And, you know, kudos to the General Sentinel for asking for it. How did they know? And don't forget, part of this tape includes these comments from Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, about COVID-19 in his area with immigrant community. And did somebody think that that was the story out of this, that story would be about Voss's comments, which, you know, there was a story that people wrote this week about what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
But the real story, and how do you not know the real story is going to be about taping the two top Republican legislature without their knowledge? That's a mind blower for some people I talked to this week.
Yep. And the governor said, I'm not going to talk about any potential disciplinary actions, but we've got to move on. Okay. New topic. Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is asking the Elections Commission for a rule to ban voter harvesting. And harvesting, let's talk about it. Will defines it as third-party requests, absentee ballots for a voter, or a voter requests and receives an absentee ballot. That ballot is collected and returned to clerk by a third party. What Will wants, third parties cannot request an absentee ballot on behalf of a voter. Third parties cannot collect and submit absentee ballots on behalf of a voter. Elections Commission once asked the legislature to clarify this issue. No response from the legislature. How big a deal, JR?
Well, I guess the first way to answer that is, I don't know the Elections Commission, with its partisan makeup, can get anything done on anything significant. We have not seen them collectively get to anywhere or anything big, right? So I don't know what they're going to do. Then it kind of question becomes, well, is there going to be another lawsuit? Will they go to court to try to do something? But don't forget, in state law, there's already an exception, for example, that if you are in a nursing home, you can have a third party collect your absentee ballot and take it back.
So there's
exception in state law. So what's going to happen with, you know, so that's not being touched, I believe, by the request. But again, I just don't know that the commission can reach an agreement on anything, because they have not proven yet they can reach deals on big things.
JR, you talk about the possibility of a lawsuit. Judge Connolly just ruled in another lawsuit, kind of preserving it. So there are about three or four swirling pending lawsuits in federal court before Connolly on the August primary and November general election, correct?
Depending on how you want to define pending, there might be five. So here's the deal. All of these suits are after a couple of things. They're all from Democrats or Democratic aligned groups that want changes to the fall elections to make it easier to vote absentee, to change the deadline for when absentee ballots are received, to change requirements to receive and turn in an absentee ballot. For example, right now, when you vote absentee, you have to have a witness sign your envelope when you sign it back in. They want to do away with that requirement, arguing that in COVID-19, it's a threat to a person's safety and health to go ask for a witness signature. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with these things. I've always said I'm not a lawyer, never think a judge is going to do, but Connolly indicated in one of his rulings this week, or his order this week, rejecting a motion to dismiss one of the suits, he wants to act quickly. There is a principle in the federal court system of you don't want to make changes, you should not make changes to elections late in the process. He wants to get this done soon, so we're not having what he called the fire drill of the April election. You don't forget April, we had a Connolly decision the Thursday before the election, a Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals decision the Friday before the election, and a U.S. Supreme Court decision the Monday before the election. He wants to avoid that.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen, but Connolly's already indicated openness to certain changes with absentee ballots. He did point out in his ruling this week that, hey, some stuff you guys want, like these proof of resident stuff, the courts have already upheld them, so it's not a great sign for those things. What I'm wondering about is deadline for absentee ballots. Is it going to be 8 p.m. election day like it usually is, or is it going to be postmarked by election day? Okay. And what that matters is, don't forget, there's all kinds of national speculation about Donald Trump, and if he's losing, what he might do. If we don't know who's winning Wisconsin election night, can you imagine just the political storm we're going to have for days in this state about what's going on?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay, next topic. Let's have a short update. We mentioned it last week. The only recommended finalist for the job of UW System President, University of Alaska President Jim Johnson. He did an online forum just this week, and he was interviewed and met with system chancellors, staff, board of regents, took some public questions. We'll hear one of his answers in a minute. He wanted to point out that the University of Alaska system funded 40% with state aid. Well, I looked it up. UW systems funded with only 18% of state aid. Also, there is a petition. UW-Madison chapter of the American Association of University Professors has a petition to reopen the search. So before we hear from Mr. Johnson, very quickly, JR, if you were a betting man, would you bet he gets his job?
Yeah. The word I got last week was, unless he falls down in these interviews and like does a horrible job, like it's just a gaffe, he's going to get the job.
Okay.
I mean, it's just such a unique situation with COVID-19, finding finalists, those kinds of things. So don't forget, too, that there was an Evers appointee on that search committee that identified him as the finalist and got behind him. So it looks like, you know, and look, would Governor Evers come out against his appointment? Would pick your influential figure in Wisconsin, say this guy's not there? I don't know.
Right.
But I just, talking to people, they just don't see any way he doesn't get the job. Again, unless he's just a gaffe machine in these interviews, he's the one.
Well, and let's listen to him answer a question about the role that the university could play in COVID-19 research and our diverse economy. Please.
There is no cornerstone in the building of recovery in our country more important, in my view, than higher education. So critical. And it's critical because of the research that we do toward perhaps a vaccine. But certainly, of course, between now and getting a vaccine treatment that we provide people. And at the state level as well, I think there's got to be a recognition at the state level of how critical the university is for coming out of this pandemic and then rebuilding the economy. I'm actually optimistic about the situation in Wisconsin because of your diverse economy, manufacturing, agriculture, biotech, energy and other areas. I think that kind of broad and diverse economic foundation, entrepreneurial as well. I mean, your ranking in terms of startups is very, very strong. So I think Wisconsin is well poised to lead going forward. And ultimately, the single biggest predictor of how a state will do in coming out of any economic crisis, but I think particularly this crisis, is the educational level and the creativity and the innovative spirit of the people.
Final topic before some odds and ends, JR, the formal deployment of the National Guard to maintain peace and quiet in the wake of the George Floyd riots was ended. Let's see, 1,500 Guard members were activated to work with local law enforcement to monitor protests, protect public property, Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, Kenosha, Racine. This is, I find it intriguing. Guard members have also collected more than 100,000 COVID-19 specimens. So they're doing a lot of chores here. The governor's response when he canceled the deployment to help with some monitoring the protests. The governor, I'm encouraged by the peaceful protesters who continue to make their voices heard and demand change. Grateful for the citizen soldiers of the Guards. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said, look, what we have seen in our community over the past several weeks is a call for radical, much-needed change. I thank the organizers on the ground who remain peaceful while exercising their right to assemble and make their voices heard. He recognized the citizen soldiers of the Wisconsin National Guard for their cooperation. Any PSs on this, JR?
The day that the governor announced that work was over was also the day the Black Legislative Caucus sent a letter to Evers asking to call a special session for Juneteenth Day, to take up these police reforms. We have not heard from the governor saying if he's going to do that. But again, if you want to get something done on that front, the governor needs buy-in from Republicans, and we just don't see that right now from what's going on.
Okay. JR, we got 2 minutes on some odds and ends. So let's point out that yesterday the governor announced $40 million directly to hospitals for unreimbursed COVID-19 costs. Point one. Point two, the governor, were you surprised by his appointment of Democratic Representative Chris Taylor as a Dane County Circuit Court judge, JR?
No. There had been some buzz for a while that when Chris announced she wasn't going to seek reelection or run for the legislature at all, because remember, she was a top candidate to replace Fred Risser in the state Senate. She announced, I think the same day that he did, that they weren't seeking reelection. There was a perception that she was looking for something, an appointment, the Evers administration. The buzz has kind of grown in the recent weeks about a judicial appointment. This makes sense for Taylor in a couple of ways. One, it actually helps create a path for her to run for state Supreme Court down the line, possibly in 2023. Don't forget, Chief Justice Rogensack would be up for re-election with a 10-year term. That year, she will turn 83 in July of 2023. So the going bet, I think, is that she won't seek re-election. That would be an open seat then for control of the court. You need judicial experience as a background if you're going to run for the court. This gives her that. And two, Democrats in the Assembly have been looking for ways out of that place because placing the minority is no fun. Yeah. They've been there for almost a decade now. It's not fully a decade. It's not like it's getting any better anytime soon. David Crowley went to Milwaukee County Executive. Casa Zamarripa ran for alderwoman in the city of Milwaukee and is leaving. It's just a way out of a not pleasant situation.
Okay, we got about less than a minute, JR. I just want to point out May general fund tax collections were off 2.6% or $66 million. Now, let's put it in context. April general fund tax collections were off $870 million. So you wrote about the Fiscal Bureau memo. You only got about 15 seconds, but summarize it.
It could have been worse. And the reason it wasn't worse is because online sales and purchase of home improvement supplies. I contributed to the latter, by the way, with some products at my house. But it was bad. It was just, we went from like buying food and drink out and about and buying clothes out and about to buying stuff online and buying stuff from home improvement stores. And it really helped minimize the impact.
Yeah. Okay. Final note. JR, I've got to get a new hip. So you have to captain the SS Rewind next week. I assume you're up to it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 12.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.